Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Glad you're with us for another edition of On DoD. This week, a focus once again on Army modernization. We get an update on that service's new agile acquisition process for upgrading its tactical networking and communications capabilities in a way that roughly keeps pace with industry. It's a process we've talked about several times before on this show, the twice-a-year network integration evaluation, or the NIE. We've also talked before about the dire condition of DoD's operation and maintenance accounts for the rest of 2013 because of sequestration, and up until very recently, the prospect that the entire government would be under a continuing resolution for the whole year. That CR problem is now solved. Congress has given the Pentagon a 2013 budget that's more or less aligned with its priorities for the current year, but sequestration remains in place, and DoD has still about $35 billion less in O&M money than it thought it would have when the year began. There were some concerns in the past few months that the NIE might be one of the things that needed to get thrown overboard. My guest for this full hour, Colonel Mark Elliott, says no. The Army is committed to the NIE, and its top leaders have determined they will find a way to fund the exercises twice a year at Fort Bliss, Texas. Elliott is the director of the Army's Land War Net Mission Command, one of the directorates that falls under the G357 Deputy Chief of Staff at Army Headquarters, for those members of our audience that pay close attention to organizational charts. For this week's show, we talked in his office just down the street from the Pentagon about what the Army has learned from the NIE over the past 2 years, including what's worked and what hasn't.
Yeah, so I think the, for me personally, big story about the NIE is we are now getting ready to put a capability set in the hands of soldiers that are getting ready to deploy. And so in the past, where we were prepping for that event and we were all of our energies were moving us toward that, we're now at the point where we're ready to realize that. And so that is a big news story for the Army, but it is a great news story for the individual soldier, leader, and commanders who now get to employ this new capability and demonstrate that we actually did get it right in how we were approaching this problem, because it was a challenge for us. As I think you probably have been talked to in the past, although well-intentioned, we were doing this in stovepipe manner. Mm-hmm. And that didn't lend itself to the integration work that we wanted to have done prior to putting it in the hands of soldiers. So now we've done that. And so we've put that in the hands of deploying units now. So 10th Mountain is one of our first units to go out with this new capability set. And I was visiting with them over the past week and sitting down with the commander and sitting down talking to some of the soldiers. And they said, wow, you know, it's not perfect, but you probably got it about 90% right. Now we've just got to take it that extra 10% to integrate it into our formations, help our soldiers understand how we're going to implement this new capability and how we can tailor it to the mission that we have, because every mission is going to be dictated by the situation. So they now have a capability that has a lot more flexibility than we had in the past. And so to me, that's the good news. So how has an NIE changed? I think what's changed is they see the fruits of their labor, and now they're more energized on, you know, continuing to improve the process. So you have something out there that is no longer this amorphous concept that you're going for. You now see it actually being realized. So to me, that's the goodness in what's happening in the NIE. Now, obviously, there are a number of other things that we're doing, but for me, it's to actually see somewhat of an end state to what you've been working mm-hmm. toward. Leaders have changed out and such, but I believe that those who can look back on it, and to include, you know, folks like General Morrison, can say, you know, we were doing good for the Army, and now we're starting to see the fruits of our labor.
So in summary, I mean, you've gone from this is a concept, we don't know if it's really going to work or not, to, oh, this really does work and we're actually producing capabilities in a great way.
10th Mountain, who was down at JRTC over the last couple of weeks and months, have been preparing themselves to deploy. And so, and they took this out, and they've been able to maneuver with it. They've been able to implement the new technologies, the new capabilities into their formations. Their soldiers understand, in the broader sense, how this is going to enhance their mission. I know a lot of times we talk about Afghanistan as it's the, you know, as our initial focus for this capability, and rightfully so, that's where we're putting a lot of our energies. But the on-the-move capabilities, which is unique to this capability set 13 system that we have, set of capabilities that we have, provides us the untethered systems from where we've had in the past. So in the past, we built up these FOBs and COBs and the infrastructure in Afghanistan, in Iraq as well, where if you wanted to go away, you left a lot of your capabilities at that location, and you were really reduced in what you could do on the road. Now we take that full capability with us, and that's what this on the move, you know, mission command does for us with capability set 13. So that's the good news story, and that's why the 10th Mountain and, you know, the senior leaders in Afghanistan are excited about getting this capability over there, because as we start to retrograde our systems out of our tethered systems, our terrestrial systems out of theater, we now have this untethered capability that we can move around the battlefield and not have to restrict ourselves to the, you know, the terrains or, you know, or locations that we did in the past.
I want to go back to the NIE process and unpack some of the things that you said at the outset here. Talk about the stovepipes. So who are the organizations that are coming together in this process to make this integrated? And how is that working culturally? Because, I mean, the organizational chart of the Army has not changed, right? The way the Army is funded has not changed. How do you kind of force all that together and get people to work together in ways they haven't?
I think... First, I'd say it's because everyone's working toward a common goal, which is to outfit our soldiers with the best possible capabilities, whether it's a material capability or a doctrinal capability. You know, we want to make sure that we put the best, you know, process and systems in the hands of soldiers. So everybody's moving toward that common goal. And so the communities I think you're probably aware of is the acquisition community, ASALT, our test community, ATEC, and then our requirements community, TRADOC. And so all of those communities come together in various different configurations to go to move toward that common goal. I would tell you that although there is, we don't have it perfect, I will tell you, I think we've made some significant improvements over time. One of our guiding documents that we have now that we did not have in the past is an Agile Lifecycle SOP that kind of informs how we actually, you know, implement this. And so everyone kind of knows their role a little bit, you know, more defined than it was in the past. Before, I think we may have maybe doing some duplicative work because everyone was just trying to move toward this to this end state. Now everyone understands the lanes that we've at least carved out today, and they move inside that lane, and they will assist others where necessary. So what do I mean by that? So when we talk about the requirements and the gaps that we're trying to get after, TRADOC has the responsibility to help identify those gaps, identify the requirements that the Army is trying to solve. And once we have those, then we turn that over to the acquisition community and say, okay, do we have any systems that are actually capable of addressing those gaps and those requirements? And if we do, then we bring those systems into the NIA. If we don't, then we put out a source of sought request to industry and say, does anyone have some capabilities that will address these gaps and these requirements that we have? If industry has something, then we ask them, hey, why don't you bring that out to the NIE and demonstrate that, or let us evaluate and let's look at the maturity of that system and see if there are some opportunities for us to bring that into the hands of soldiers and future capabilities. But we also look to the test community, of course, to evaluate and test those systems to make sure they're meeting all of the Army's requirements from a performance perspective, and to ensure that when we do put it in the hands of soldier, it actually does what we say it's going to do. So that's how that community of or the triad, as many refer to them, helps bring this together. And I think over time, we've gotten, you know, better at this. One, because everyone understands our role. Doesn't mean that they don't, you know, assist in other areas, but we at least understand the roles that each one plays in implementing an NIE.
Mm-hmm. Down a little lower within the acquisition community, I mean, my sense of how PEOs and PMs have worked in the past and maybe still do is, this is my product, I'm going to build it soup to nuts, hardware, software, until it's done. Is that changing at all in a way that lets those PMs and PEOs integrate their products along a common Army-wide baseline? Because I think that's the objective, right?
So one of the things that we've done as a result of the NIA is we have this concept called a common operating environment. That may be one of the things that you've heard a little bit about. We tend to look at that from more of a software perspective, where in the past, individual PMs and PEOs were developing their product on their timeline, you know, with the necessary software and hardware that was that would support that system or capability they were bringing to bear. Today, we've asked ourselves, do we have it right? And are there some efficiencies that can be gained from maybe looking at a different way of approaching that? So we said, what's common to all of those systems? So there's probably an underlying software baseline that is probably common to every one of our systems that we put out there, mm-hmm. that has a software, you know, spin to it. So we said, let's just establish what the baseline is. So I have 10 systems out there, and each one of those systems has some, you know, aspect of that baseline. One system may be 50% baseline. The other 50% is unique to that system. Another one may have 90% is baseline and only 10% of it is unique. Mm-hmm. We said, let's just take the baseline off the table. I don't need you developing 100 different baselines. I'm going to use one baseline. Now, PM, only develop what's unique to your system. And, oh, by the way, I really don't need a lot of different platforms. I can use just one platform.
Meaning hardware, rather.
And you just bring your application to that hardware or that capability, and we probably can gain a lot of efficiencies. So that's easy to say. Mm-hmm. That's very, very hard to do because everyone's on their own timeline. And so what we're asking our PMs is to look at your next opportunity for maybe a engineering change and then tell me, at that point, how do you now integrate into this new common operating environment as opposed to continue to develop something that is separate and unique? So Mrs. Hsu, the acquisition executive, has given some guidance to get after that. And so each one of the PMs is looking for, when can I start to do that in my particular program, where now I'm moving toward this baseline, this common operating environment, as opposed to building a separate, unique system. And so we believe there's some goodness in that. The other thing that she's done, which I think is really going to pay dividends for us, is more back on the hardware side of this, is as we bring our industry partners out to an NIE, we are now partnering our PMs with those particular programs or those particular systems, where in the past we've always provided a common or our center of excellence, our TRADOC partners with them. Now we're partnering a PM or adding a PM to that. So we get to look at this from a .LPF and a material solution that says, hey, you have a widget. We're going to look at it from the doctrinal piece, the material, and the leader, the training and everything, as we, you know, matriculate that system through an NIE. Mm-hmm. And each one of the stages, we'll ask ourselves, are we getting it right? Is this system meeting all the gaps that we laid out for that particular system? And are there opportunities at the end of an NIE at some point in the future to take that system and bring it into the Army inventory? We ought to get it to the end of an NIE and not have to ask ourselves, is this system a viable candidate for future, you know, utility to the Army? We ought to know the answer to that by the time we get to the end of the NIE, because we've had our TRADOC, our doctrinal, our training folks looking at it, but we've also had our acquisition community looking at it, and we've had our test community looking at it. So we ought to know whether or not that system is going to fit into some niche for us in the future. And so that's the uniqueness in what we're finding out of the NIE that we have not done. And 13-2 will be the first time that we will actually, you know, marry all of these things up at the beginning and walk ourselves through.
Mm.
Colonel Mark Elliott is the director of the Army's Land War Net Mission Command. Back with more on how the Army is trying to get rid of IT stovepipes through its network integration evaluation process. After a short break, this is on DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. This is on DoD. Thanks for joining us as we rejoin our conversation with Colonel Mark Elliott, the director of the Army's Land War Net Mission Command, talking about the Army's network integration evaluation. Before the break, we talked about how the Army is trying to get its various functional communities to work together to deliver capabilities to soldiers. Not an easy task, but the Army thinks the NIE is the right way to work through that bureaucracy.
Back to the de-stovepiping of systems. Have you had, you don't necessarily need to name systems at the top of your head, but have you had examples where, it was being built by a PEO in a stovepipe and you have off-ramped it into this brave new world of a common operating environment at the NIE or at some other point in the broader agile acquisition lifecycle? We're still a work in progress.
I think where I would probably pick a system would maybe be some of our radios that we have out there. In the past, not necessarily just inside a service, but, across the DoD, individual services may have procured their own radios. Mm-hmm. And so today we're no longer doing that. Today we look across the department and say, is there utility for this radio across each one of the, or one of the other services? Maneuver radio is probably one of the ones I'd use as an example. This is a system that came out of the GMR system where it was great capabilities, but it was just a large system that was probably not getting after what we said we wanted. It went into the acquisition executive, and they made the decision, well, let's off-ramp this. Let's change this system, and let's see if there is some goodness across the DoD for the system. And now we're developing that system. So from a air perspective, it can support some of our air platforms. From a ground perspective, it's clearly going to support some of our ground systems. And so that one, de-scoping of that GMR system now is feeding multiple different platforms. So some of our air platforms will have it. Different variation of it, but nonetheless, similar capabilities. But we'll also do that in some of our clearly in our ground platforms. And so that would be one system.
Back to lessons learned in this process, and you're about to start, it's the fifth NIE or sixth? Where are we now?
I think we're in the fifth one right now.
In the fifth right now. So one of the things I think that you've learned is that, you said at the beginning of this interview that, you try to bring stuff out to the NIE that's 90% ready and the soldiers get it to 100%, hopefully. That's one of the things you've learned, right? You don't want to test systems out there at White Sands and Fort Bliss. You want to do that where? In the lab?
So one of the things we do say about the NIE is we want mature systems out there. And we really emphasize that because although some may characterize the NIE as an experiment, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's an evaluation of capabilities. And so we do some lab-based risk reduction before we bring a system out to the NIE. And it's paid great dividends. One, it gives the industries and our programs of record an opportunity to tweak some systems that may not have done well in what I consider a coexistence. Because one of the things that I really push hard is these systems have to coexist well together. They have to play well together. That's the whole concept behind this, the integration of previous stovepipe systems. And so the lab-based risk reduction phase of this allows us to take that initial look at individual systems and say, okay, I know your system probably performs to the level that you've specified, but how does it coexist with our other systems? Does it interfere? Does it cause challenges for other systems? And if there are ways for us to tweak those and make modifications in the lab, then we know, it's going to do well out at the NIE, or it stands a very good chance of doing well out at the NIE. So that's why the lab-based risk reduction helps us. But it also, in all fairness, it eliminates systems that just aren't ready. And I think that helps not only us, but it helps industry understand if you're going to put this system in the hands of soldiers and in the environment that we want to operate it, if it does not make it out of the lab, then you may need to go back and make some modifications to it. But my understanding is we actually help some of the industry partners while they're going through that. And we say, if you do this, you're probably going to get a better end result. And you're probably going to be better prepared to go out to the NIE and do well at the NIE. And so that's where that lab-based risk reduction really assists us in whittling down the amount of systems that we want to come out there, because we only have just so much space in the way of the things that we can get out at an NIE. And so that's just another aspect of starting to draw that list of partners down a little bit.
More from Colonel Mark Elliott on the Army's network integration evaluation process and what he thinks the service needs to do a better job of in terms of working with industry when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Serbin. This is on DOD. Welcome back to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbian. Glad you're with us as we get back to our guest this week, Colonel Mark Elliott, the director of the Army's Land War Net Mission Command, talking mostly this week about what the Army has learned through its much-publicized network integration evaluation process at Fort Bliss, Texas, and what it needs to change to make it work better.
What do you think you've learned so far through the whole NIE process about interacting with industry and what you can do better in that arena?
So for me personally, I'd say we don't have it right yet. And so what do I mean by that? I would say that in my discussions with industry, if I could get a little bit further out in defining what my requirements are, defining where the Army is going with its requirements, they could better write their or spend their IRAD dollars so that they could start to invest in something that they know the Army may utilize in the future, as opposed to, throwing out a dartboard and just hoping the Army or having to push a capability on the Army that the Army may not be ready to take advantage of or may have left that technology.
Right.
So if I can get a little bit further out ahead of them and give them some guidance on where the Army is going, I think we can, have a better marriage down the road.
Because the life cycle right now, sorry to interrupt, but it's not very long, right? It's something like 6 or 8 months between the time you put out your source of SOD and they're expected to bring a system to you, something like that?
So it's actually shorter than that when you really look at when we put out our memo, our source of SOD memo, and then when they've got to bring something into get our white paper is our first requirement that they have to provide to the time that they have to actually bring a physical box or system into the lab. There's only a couple of months from the time we do that. So there is not a lot of time. Every industry partner cannot, respond to a cycle that's that short. 2 to 3 months versus 18 to 24 months is a lot of lead time. And that's what we want to give them. And so we don't want to play, kind of gotcha, with this. We want to be a little bit more deliberate in our process. And so that's what we know we have to do better. And we've been talking to industry about how we can do that. But that's not easy because, if you get caught in the cycle of trying to keep pace with technology, you're not going to get there because we cannot keep pace with technology. Which is one of the reasons why we're leveraging industry to see where industry is moving with technology and look for ways to leverage that. Well, if I'm looking at that technology development and I'm writing my requirements to see how I get after that and I pass that back on to industry, they can say, well, now I know where to spend some dollars at. Now I know what capabilities really the Army is looking for as opposed to, kind of guessing at it. And so that's where we're trying to do better, and industry is helping us with that. We're engaging them a lot during and after and in between NIEs to see how we can gain better efficiencies out of their dollars, because that's really what it's about. They have limited dollars as well.
Sure. And one of the main criticisms, especially in the early days, and I'm sure you've heard this a million times, is that the Army never buys anything from the NIE, from industry, or doesn't really have a process to, doesn't know how to buy. Valid criticism?
I'd say that we understand their frustration with how frequently we're buying things. And I would maybe say more so big ticket items is where most people maybe focus, you know, those comments. But we clearly are buying things. We're just not, you know, we're not buying big acquisition systems that I think many would want us to. But there are some smaller buys that we're doing, and we're getting better at this. Where I would say that we're doing better at is looking at the technologies that industry is bringing out to the NIE, and then looking back at some of our programs of record and saying, how can we take that capability and bring it into a program of record and take advantage of that? So that's where I think we're getting smarter than, mm-hmm. you know, maybe we were in the past. We're not competing with industry. Our programs of records aren't competing with industry. I think it's more of a looking for opportunities to say, gosh, that's a capability that would fit very well with this particular program of record. Where's the next change that we're going to make to that system, and can we incorporate that capability? Not necessarily that particular widget, but that capability, because where we still have to maintain integrity with our 5000 series on how we acquire things, but there sure are some opportunities for us to do that, you know, sooner rather than later. And so in that, in NIE 14.1, we will actually introduce our first request for proposal for a system, you know, where we're going in from the beginning of it and saying we want to acquire something. And so that's some of the good news. But clearly we can do better. We know that. But what we're excited about is industry, although they're a little frustrated, they have not walked away from this process because they see the goodness in it. And what we're excited about is they're helping us, and they're, you know, they're telling us, you know, some ways that we can improve this process. And it's the engagements between with ASALT engaging with industry and with us in G357 engaging with industry, which is improving the process. And so that's why we brought the marrying a program manager up with a system under evaluation at the beginning so that we can have better, you know, linkage through this process.
Right.
So although maybe not a monumental leap, you know, in improvements over our process, but it is an incremental, you know, change, and I think we're only going to get better in it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned not having done big buys through the NIE so far, and that kind of takes us into a little bit more discussion of capability set management, because that's kind of one of the tenets, right? You're not going to do gigantic purchases. You're going to do incremental purchases and improve the network over time gradually, right?
So what I would say, our first goal for the NIE was to do this integration. We think we've got that about where we want it right now. Indicative, you know, of that is our capability set 13 that we're getting ready to put in the hands of the soldiers right now, you know, getting ready to deploy. So that was our first mission, was to make sure we had everything integrated. Mm-hmm. Now that we have it integrated and we have a baseline established, now we can say, now where are there some opportunities to make some incremental and changes on it? What we don't want to do is buy ahead of need and buy a capability that 2 or 3 years down the road is out of style, out of, you know, no longer meets our requirements. So if I buy in small increments, but I buy more often, I can, to some degree, keep pace with technology. We're not going to be ahead of them, and we're probably not going to run alongside them, but we sure would like to be, you know, on their tail and making sure that we are at least benefiting from some of the research and development that they're doing and the changes that they're doing. So that's why this incremental, you know, process is so important to us. And that's why this relationship with industry will, in my opinion, will always endure, because we are so reliant on, you know, their modernization efforts that, you know, that we cannot walk away from that marriage.
The example I hear people use all the time is, if we find a new radio that we like, we're not going to buy one for every soldier in the Army. Instead, you will do what?
Instead, we'll do this in capability sets, which is what we kind of started off talking about. And so some of the challenges that we have is platforms. So I can buy a radio or I can buy a system for one platform that may not fit well in another platform. Well, if I buy, and I'm focusing on one particular platform right now, if I buy enough radios out, kit the whole Army, I'm going to find when I get to that other platform, it doesn't fit. So that's where small incremental buys, you know, affords us to marry up with our platform modernization efforts in the Army as well. So if I'm going from a Stryker platform that may have a little bit more space, we call it swap size, weight, power, I may have a lot more space on that particular platform, whereas when I go to an Abrams or an M1 or a Bradley, I may not have the same kind of swap inside that vehicle. But the Army may have another, you know, platform coming online down the road. Mm-hmm. Then I can now say, when I get closer to that platform, I'm going to develop that similar radio, similar capabilities, but I'll develop it for that particular platform. And so that's why this incremental approach to modernization just makes more sense to us, so that we're not buying ahead of need.
A little bit more on capability set management. Tell me if I've got this wrong, but my sense is the old way of doing things was things basically got fielded to a unit when they were ready, when a PM or a PEO was done with them. Mm-hmm. And instead what you're doing is you're bringing integrated sets of capabilities all at one time. I mean, that has to bring its own set of challenges, I guess, is my question, because you're basically throwing a whole kit and caboodle of capabilities at them all at once.
We're taking a lot of technology and giving it to a unit all at one time, and we're asking them to, you know, absorb all of that technology and that capability at one time. So back to your initial question, is that the right way to do this? We believe that doing the capability sets is the right way of doing it, and I believe we've demonstrated that during our initial fielding to some of the units inside, you know, 10th Mountain Division. And so if you sit down, and as I mentioned earlier, you sit down with the brigade commander who's, you know, getting ready to potentially deploy, and he says, you got it right, or at least you got it about 90% right, then that's, to me, the good news story. It is a lot, you know, for them to bite off of all at once. And so if there is anything that we can do better, it's the other side of a NIE that I spoke of earlier. So we tend to get fixated on the material side of an NIE. Mm-hmm. But what about the doctrine? What about the training, the leader development? Those are the things that we're trying to improve. So when we go touch a unit with all of this capabilities, we want to make sure we have our training plans, you know, set properly, and we understand how to train this unit to utilize this equipment. So where best to you know, learn that? It's out at the NIE. As we've gone through a couple of iterations of this, we know what sticks and what doesn't. We know what's overwhelming to a unit and where we believe we've got it about right. Mm-hmm. And so we take that same concept, you know, out to the unit that we're going to field, and we say, listen, we're not just going to throw all this stuff at you and then walk away and say, gosh, look at, you know, we've done good because we brought it all to you at one time. You know, they may say, well, maybe the incremental process was better. No, we're going to bring it to you, and we're going to utilize the understanding and the lessons learned that we got out of the NIE on how to train you to utilize all this equipment. We don't have that perfect yet. When I sat down and talked with the commander out at 10th Mountain, he said it was a lot, but they were able to absorb it. But the goodness is they have now these, you know, these train up exercises to validate everything that we kind of walk them through and we train them on to ensure that it is sticking with their soldiers and they are able to utilize it. I will tell you they are, because they're already iterating off of the equipment that we've given them, and the soldiers are saying, this is great, and I can even do this with it. And so those are some of the great news stories that I took away from my visit out at, with 10th Mountain.
Our guest is Colonel Mark Elliott, the director of the Army's Land War Net Mission Command. Back with one more segment after this last break. We'll talk about expanding capability set management to the Army's stateside installations and whether budget trouble might pose a problem for future NIEs. It's on DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, I'm Jared Serbu. Glad you're with us for one more segment with Colonel Mark Elliott, the director of the Army's Land War Net Mission Command. We spent most of the hour on this week's show talking about the network integration evaluation and capability set management, something the Army now wants to use to begin upgrading the IT infrastructure on its bases. Infrastructure, the Army says, is now antiquated and hasn't benefited from the surge of cash it's gotten from overseas contingency funds during the last 10 years of war.
We were talking off the air a little bit about the memo Secretary McHugh signed out back in early March about taking that capability set management approach and using it to modernize installations. I know some of that is out of your swim lane and it belongs to the Army CIO, but I mean, what do you think the goodness is there that you've learned so far that you can help General Lawrence implement back on the installation side?
So the first thing I would say is, wow, what a good news story that the Army has recognized that this whole idea of capability sets is a great approach to fielding systems to our formations. And so taking advantage of that, General Lawrence has implemented this across the Army as a construct of how we're going to modernize our post camps and stations. We'll utilize a very similar approach in capability sets. To me, the goodness is that's where the tactical arena will get to leverage some of the improvements in those post camps and stations, whether we're doing installation as a docking station, you know, where in the past, I was talking with some folks the other day. I said, you know, ever since I was a lieutenant, we always talked about coming out of an exercise or coming out of some kind of an event and getting back to the garrison and then having to pack everything up and put it into the connexes and in our storage, you know, huts and wait for the next exercise. Mm-hmm. But we've always, you know, fantasized about plugging that into our garrison network and using that equipment in our daily, you know, work and being able to become more and more proficient on that so that when we go out to the field, we know more, we know better, and we're not having to build the system from scratch every time. So what this, you know, capability sets approach at the post camps and station does for us, it affords us that opportunity to have that marriage that we may have missed in the past. So now when I take something out of the field or take something off of the deployment and I bring it back to a post camp or station, I can plug it in and I have the same goodness. I have the same ability to train. I can do that virtually. I can do that, you know, across the installation, or I can do it across our post camps and station that may be, you know, located somewhere else under some other combatant commander. So if we modernize our post camps and stations using this construct, we know that, you know, we probably can do a lot more than we were in the past. And we do that maybe in a virtual manner and probably save a few dollars. But that's where I think the capability set approach, you know, really does afford us, you know, a chance to make some, you know, major improvements in our capabilities.
In just the last couple of minutes we have left, Colonel, I can't let you get away without talking a little bit about money. The Congress has given DOD an appropriations bill for the year, which helps, I'm sure, but I think the Army still has a pretty serious operations and maintenance crunch for the remainder of the year. What does that do to the NIE and this whole process to the extent that we know that right now?
So we took a hard look at the NIE and asked ourselves, are there some opportunities to do some cost savings in the NIE? And honestly, do we need to continue to conduct this event? Is the juice worth the squeeze, as many people say? Mm-hmm. And, you know, resounding yes across all the senior leaders said, yes, we have to continue to do this. We have too much goodness out at this event that we do not want to walk away from it. Are there opportunities to gain some efficiencies? Clearly. And so that's one of the things that we're taking a look at. But the message from, you know, from the Army is we're going to continue this endeavor because we believe that as we start to draw down from our deployed force, we're going to need venues like the NIE to continue to modernize our networks, but also to get those systems out to the, you know, to the larger Army. And we believe if we, as I mentioned earlier, moving this across our different platforms, we believe the NIE affords us the opportunity to do that because, as you know, we have, you know, almost every one of our platforms out at the NIE. So that's why we want to keep doing this. And so 13.2, which is our next NIE, will happen, and 14.1 will happen, and we're planning for subsequent NIEs. And so that's the goodness, and that was the analysis that came out of this. But we're looking for ways to gain some efficiencies, and we think there are ways to do that. One I talked about earlier is our continued dialogue with industry to make sure that we're, one, taking advantage of their IRAD dollars, but also focusing our efforts. I talked about our baseline, so we've got our baseline set now so that we don't have to make big changes to that. Those big changes cost us dollars. Every time we touch a vehicle, we had to spend more money to do that. Now we don't believe we have to do that as often, so we can make incremental changes. So there are some savings that we can see from that. And how do we test? You know, so we didn't take advantage of all the testing that a system may have gone through, you know, through its life cycle. So now we're saying, let's look at some efficiencies that we can gain from testing so that we don't have to continue to go through all of these operational tests out at the NIE. We can take advantage of this series of evaluations or tests that particular system could have gone through and get credit for that, where in the past we didn't, so we would have to just test until we met our requirements and our operational needs for that particular system. So there are some things that we can do to help this effort of being more efficient and gaining some reduction in costs. But we're going to have to continue to look for other places as well. So, you know, from a funding perspective, were we concerned with this at first? Of course we were. We were wanting to make sure that the Army was getting its money's worth. And in my opinion, and clearly the analysis shows, we are.
Colonel Elliott, it's been a really fascinating hour. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate you coming on.
Well, sir, thank you for having us, and we look forward to future opportunities to talk about the goodness of this event that the Army has taken on. So thank you.
You bet. Look forward to talking to you again.
Colonel Mark Elliott is the director of the Army's Land War Net Mission Command, one of the key players in the Army's network integration evaluation and the Army's new way of deploying technology and capability sets rather than program by program. We'll post that new memo from Secretary John McHugh on that point, along with the rest of this interview, in case you missed part of our conversation, at federalnewsradio.com. That is going to do it for this week's edition of On DoD. Very glad you joined us. We'll be back again next week. Hope to have you here. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.